All right, Project, welcome back to In the Black, number 58. This week on the show, Raf sits down with Andrew Barker from Tribal Clash. So, Raf did the Tribal Clash comp. It was, what was it, February?
Yep.
February, yeah. So, it's interesting because obviously with, you know, all the changes in sort of the competitive season in the sport across it, which, you know, is just all up in the air at the moment, there is some companies emerging with some fitness comps that are, you know, suited to CrossFitters, but Spartan Races, F45 as group fitness, just kind of anything in general. And this is what this guy has built and is building. And it's kind of his story today on the show. Yeah.
And if you listen carefully, he raised $500,000 on like a Kickstarter, basically a crowdfunding, a different one like we did, basically from people that just did his comp and was like, yeah, I want to help you grow it, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible. So, that's what we've got on the show today. I was not able to make it. Raf does a fantastic job, of course, doing this interview. So, you guys will enjoy that. Guys, remember, today was brought to you by Wattify. Wattify.com/MMP for any deal. And there's some new updates on Wattify as well.
So, very exciting. They have released a gender-neutral leaderboard.
Okay.
So, normally, there's if you have Wattify, and if you don't, you're an idiot. But you got men, and then you got women on either side. Now, there's one where you can basically... everyone's all in one section.
Yeah.
So, you can just like... members can choose to not be categorized either way. So, they're doing well in the 21st century Wattify.
Man, it's progressive.
And I do believe they are the only client management system for gyms that do that.
Right.
A lot of the other big name brands don't. And the other one is that if you already use Wattify, if you don't, you can jump on, you'll get this straight away. But if you do use Wattify, they started Appointments 3.0. So, basically, it's like Google Calendar, but in Wattify.
Mm.
So, your coaches and you yourself as a gym owner can book people in. So, like book in PTs, book in appointments, all straight through the app.
Mm.
So, you could like sell a PT and then book the PT straight in and you guys get notices about it.
Right.
So, it's pretty sick. So, they've redone the whole thing. And if you haven't been using appointments, you can check it out and your appointments would have been automatically updated in the background.
Yeah. Awesome. That's awesome. That's fantastic. So, wattify.com/MMP if you guys want to get a deal to get started. And then, of course, guys, True Coach as well. If you are, you know, delivering online programs, if you receive online programs, you've heard it so many times from us, this is the platform to be on. It's easy. They got the iOS app, which is just absolutely killer. Raf uses it every day. TrueCoach.co/MMP for a deal. Free trial to get started and then a percentage off your next month. Go get it. All right. In the Black with Andrew Barker from Tribal Clash.
All right. Welcome back, My Muscle Project. Today, we have a special In the Black. So, I spent last weekend at a comp called Tribal Clash in North Wollongong and I'm still sore and I'm still pulling the sand out of my ears. But today, we have the guy who I can put my complaints towards. Towards how heavy the stones were, Andrew Barker, who is the founder and creator of Tribal Clash. So, thanks for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, do you want to start with, you know, a lot of comps have started now because of particularly the sanctionals and everything like that. It's like it's a new thing and something everyone's talking about. So, do you want to start with how you started Tribal Clash, how long it's been going, and why you started it in the first place?
Sure, yeah. So, Tribal Clash started in 2013 in the UK. So we've been going for 6 years now. So the event we just delivered in Wollongong will be the ninth Tribal Clash event. We built it from that original UK event in 2013 to now there. Well, this year there will be four. So we started off with Australia in February. Next we're in Portugal, which is going to be a really big event. Then we've got...
And you've done Portugal multiple times, right?
Yeah, this will be the third time in Portugal. Yeah, yeah, so and this year we'll have 216 teams.
Wow,
Jesus. Each team has six people in, so that's, you know, 1,500 athletes.
Yes.
So I think, I'm pretty sure that's the biggest functional fitness, CrossFit style competition in Europe, possibly even the world, I'm not sure. So yeah, so that's third year. Then we've got another new one, which will be Huntington State Beach in California. Mm. That's going to happen in June. And then we're back to the UK in July, and that's the original one. So that's been running for all of that time now since 2013. And then the plan is if we can make it happen for us to have another event towards the end of the year in South Africa.
Hmm.
Yeah. So
when you started, it's 2013 was the first one.
Yeah.
So if I go back to then, I've been doing CrossFit for maybe 12 months. And that was a time where I think people really thought CrossFit Games was going to go like insane because it was like going on the up and the up and the up. They'd been in the StubHub Center for like, I think their third year.
Yeah.
And it really seemed like it was just going to keep getting bigger.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's pulled back a bit since then. So why did you start a comp at that time when it seemed like the CrossFit Games was just going to take over?
That's a really good question. I think, before Tribal Clash, I was the director of a company called Endurance Life, and we used to organize endurance events, so okay. marathons, triathlons, adventure races. And we were pretty experimental with what we did. I was really into endurance races, so I did plenty of triathlons and marathons and things myself. The peak of my own personal kind of competitive career was taking part in an event called the Norseman, which happens every year in Norway, and it's the world's most extreme triathlon. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Nah.
But it's pretty crazy. So it's an iron distance triathlon. So yep. you swim 2.4 miles, cycle 112, and then you finish with a marathon.
Yeah, basically a full length.
Full length Ironman, yeah. Yep. Only the Norseman happens in Norway. So you start off in a freezing cold fjord with kind of inky black water. At 4 in the morning, you get on a passenger ferry and it takes you out to the middle of the fjord and then you jump off.
Jesus.
And that's how the race starts. And then you swim to the side of the fjord and then you cycle. The first 40K is just straight up. It's like 45 degree practically. And then you go across the Hardangervidda Plateau, which is the highest glacial plateau in Northern Europe. And so you're cycling along and there's kind of like piles of ice all by the side of the road. And the weather is just changing all the time. And then once you get off the plateau, you come back almost down to sea level and then up and down three of the kind of the highest mountains in southern Norway.
Cycling.
So it's a brutal cycle ride. And then when you finish that, you're back at sea level and you have to finish running a marathon. First half is relatively flat, but the second half is straight uphill and you finish at the top of southern Norway's highest mountain. And there's not even a track. It's just boulders piled on top of each other. Yeah. It's insane. So this race is crazy. It took me 17 hours straight.
17 hours?
17 hours. That was the first go. And the cool thing about that particular event is that 10K from the finish, so you've done all that work, and you get 10K from the finish, and then there's this checkpoint. And if you are 160th, so they only allow 250 people to start.
Yes.
So if you are 161st at that checkpoint, 10K from the finish, you have to go left and you get a white t-shirt. So you still do the same distance, but you finish at a lower level.
Yep.
If you're 160th or better, you go right and you go up to the top of the mountain and you get a black t-shirt. And so I did that first in 2009 and I was 161st.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was the guy,
the first white t-shirt.
I was the first white t-shirt. But that moment when
the winner of the losers.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy puts his hand out and he's like, stop, you're not going any further. And you're like, oh my God. You know, you try and convince him to change his mind. It's like, there's no mercy there. So I was pretty dejected after that. And I came back and I was sort of like, I'm never doing that again. And then a 6 months or 9 months passed. And I thought, you know what, I've got unfinished business there. So I knew I had to kind of change the way I trained personally.
Yes.
And up until that point, it was just lots of long, slow distance, typical kind of endurance style training. And sorry, this is turning out to be quite a long story.
No, go for it.
Okay. So I started looking at ways I could do things a little bit differently. Mm. And as you say, CrossFit was kind of in its infancy in the UK too. I think there was only 20 or 30 boxes at the time in 2009.
And were you in one of those boxes?
No, not at all.
So I was focusing on your insane
Yeah, endurance. Yeah, exactly. I was just into endurance. And I hadn't even heard of CrossFit. And then a friend of mine who I knew that didn't live too far away said, hey, well, look, you know, why don't you try CrossFit? And I was like, what's CrossFit? And he's like, well, come on down. So I went to the nearest box to me, which was about an hour and a half away. And then I started training there. And for my first session, I was like, I was absolutely hooked.
Yes.
You know, it was everything I think I'd been searching for up until that moment. You know, that was sort of the intensity. And I realized, even though I'd done all of these, you know, crazy triathlons and stuff, I really actually wasn't fit.
Yep.
I had great cardiovascular endurance, but I was really weak. I couldn't lift my own body weight overhead. I could barely do pull-ups.
Couldn't do the 96 kilo stone, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No way. No. And I was really light. I mean, now I'm like 95 kilos and I'm not a huge guy.
Yes.
And then I was like 78 kilos or something. So anyway, I sort of started down that route, and the more I got into CrossFit, the less appealing the long endurance type of stuff became to me. But I still loved being outdoors, and I loved the aspect of that came from triathlons or adventure racing when I was in beautiful places outdoors, enjoying the scenery, And I loved the challenge that came from things like adventure racing, where you had a kind of, you know, a real cerebral challenge as well. So it was about thinking. And so adventure racing, you need to be able to navigate and think on your feet and have a plan and a strategy. And so I looked at everything that was happening. And of course, I was aware of the CrossFit Games. And but that didn't tick all the boxes for me personally, because it was still pretty much indoors, you know. And actually, I find just endless combinations of snatches and burpees pretty boring, if I'm completely honest. So I thought, cool, well, I want to do an event that I want to do. And I started looking for the kind of thing I wanted to do, and I couldn't find it. I just couldn't find anything that really floated my boat. So I thought, okay, screw this. Let's do it ourselves. So in a spectacular outdoor location, let's make it like a box throwdown in the sense that you do multiple events. So we test as broadly as possible.
Yep.
And let's make it team, because that was the other aspect of competing that I really enjoyed. So most of the endurance challenges that I'd done had been, you know, personal solo challenges. Right. You know, you do an Ironman on your own. But what I really got the biggest kick from was things like adventure racing, where you might be in a team with several other people, and the interpersonal relationships and the team dynamics that you have to deal with to succeed in that kind of challenge was something that, again, personally, I found the most rewarding. And also the way that when you compete, when you go through those kind of hardships and challenges with other people, that you become really close, you become really good friends. And I found that so rewarding. And I think it means more to win or to do well with other people. And most importantly of all, you try so much harder when you're doing it with your buddies, because you're not doing it for you anymore. You're doing it for them. You don't want to let them down. You've seen that in Tribal Clash. Yeah. You know, you are in the pain cave. Yeah. You're right in that pain cave and you're dying, but you're like, you're not going to put it down until they do, because you don't want to be the one that lets them down and vice versa. And as a result, that squeezes so much more out of you. And if you're a competitor, anything you can do to get that feeling where you know you couldn't have put any more in than you did, you know, that's what drives you. And so I kind of had this, I don't know if I knew it necessarily at the time, but I was sort of aware of it and all these kind of ideas floating around in my head. So we put it all into one competition that turned out to be Tribal Clash. Yeah. And it was incredibly experimental to start with. I didn't know if anybody would come, but in that first year, we got 100 teams and we sold out. And within, you know, a few days of doing that first competition, we put it on sale again for the next year, and it sold out in about an hour.
Yep.
And then within 3 years, we were getting three or four times more applications to take part in the event than we actually had space for. Yep. So, demand massively outstripped supply. So we knew we were onto something pretty special. And it, for whatever reason, the things that motivated and inspired me, obviously, you know, captured the imaginations of all the people that came down and did it. I think coupled with that, I'd obviously had 10 years event direction experience. Mm. So we were able to make sure we delivered quite a slick service. And I don't know, the rest is history, and it's just spiraled from there.
Yeah, I think the two crucial points you mentioned is, one, not going just back to the gym is awesome. You know, being able to like have a swim, almost have a surf in between events, everyone was enjoying so much. And then number two, it did seem like all the comps that started, you know, in that sort of time frame were run by people that had never run comps before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember one going out to some shitty gym doing like my first, I had to get there at 6 a.m. to sign in. So I left home at 5 and my first event was at 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a joke. We were about 12 minutes. I didn't do anything. And my second event was at 5:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, it's just such a shit day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, Tribal Clash was, it was the reverse. And I guess that's come from you doing it for 10 years before you even started.
Yeah, I mean, and there's that. But also what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, I've done a lot of, you know, local CrossFit competitions myself, just where I live. And it's the same thing. You don't really want to spend a day of your life
in the gym.
Sometimes it's in the parking lot of an industrial estate.
Yeah.
And it's like, I got to the point where it's like, I really enjoy competing, but you know what? I just don't want to spend most of my day in an industrial zone. Yeah. So, so we just kind of crammed that all the good stuff that we could together in one event. And it worked out pretty well, I think.
Yeah. The other point is that I noticed with your comp is Like you've basically worked out a way to remove scaling from the competition.
Yeah.
So it's like really clever, but it's like, you know, you have to do a really difficult muscle up. And if you can, awesome. If you can't, you just get help and it's less points.
Absolutely.
Or like the stones, you know, there's such a low skill level to that. It's
yeah.
Like lifter, you don't.
Yeah.
There's no like, you know, barbells falling on necks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought process and experimentation gone into that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where it all comes from, the programming, and we spend a lot of time on that, and we think everything through and we test it, and then we get the team involved, and then we look at how we can improve it from all different sides, from the spectator point of view, from the judging point of view, from a scoring point of view. But what informs all of our decisions right the way through everything we do at Tribal Clash is we have this sort of one golden, I don't know what you'd call it, value or principle.
Yep.
And that's, we always ask, is this, whenever we come to making a decision, it's, is this going to improve the athlete experience?
Mm.
And if it's going to improve the athlete experience, we'll do it. If it's going to detract from the athlete experience, we won't do it. And that guides everything that we do. And it's really important to me that as we grow, we keep that, because I think that's one of the things that makes our competition truly special.
Yeah, I mean, just from an athlete point of view, being able to actually do, you know, nearly a 1 hour workout to start the day, which is awesome, because that's often what you miss with like 4 minute workouts, right?
Yeah.
But then not actually having to wait an hour for every heat.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of planning that went into that is what made the day.
Yeah. Well, I'm really pleased to hear that. That's that makes me feel really good. Yeah. I mean, we, as I say, we put a lot of work and time into working out both the programming, scheduling and the workouts. And so that's really good. And I think it's something we're very aware of as we look at, you know, Tribal Clash isn't a CrossFit event.
Yes.
CrossFit's a great way to train for Tribal Clash. It really is. But in itself, it's not enough, because, you know, you need to... Tribal Clash demands teamwork, communication, strategy, the ability to think fast on your feet. It's so much about the chemistry of your team. So you can train really hard on your own, but if six individual athletes who've trained really hard on their own turn up to take part in Tribal Clash, they're not going to do... Well, I'm not going to say they're not going to do well, but they won't do anywhere near as well as a team that regularly gets together and they practice those things.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they work as one well-oiled machine. It's all about unity. But we look at the programming from other competitions that are out there, including, you know, CrossFit and the sanctional events. And it seems to me that the team events are generally... they're kind of the poor relation, and they're not very well thought through.
Yeah.
And often they'll just be done relay style, and there'll be a version of the individual events where...
it's just like, less, do one at a time.
Exactly. I go, you go, she goes, he goes, done. And it's like, that's not a team competition.
Yeah.
That is not team. That's individual smashed together.
Yeah.
And that's not what we want. We want to make sure that the six individuals that come to Tribal Clash all feel they can contribute in a meaningful way to the work that's being done, to the task at hand, and go away having had a great time and have all been involved for an equal amount of time in that. And everyone has their part to play. Like you noticed there, you know, even if you can't necessarily do all of the aspects of a particular workout, there's going to be some way you can contribute and it will make a difference. And that's something that we try very, very hard to make sure that is always in everything that we do.
Yeah. So switching gears to probably the most talked about topic, I would say, when I was at the comp is... you know, everyone was always asking me, you know, do you think they make money out of running this comp?
Yeah.
And I think the most basic thing everybody does when they get to this comp is they look at how many teams are on the heat list.
Mm-hmm.
They think about how much they paid for their entry fee. They times them together.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, man, I don't know how they put this on. It seems like they've flown out judges. They've done all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked that, because, and it's interesting that you say that. You go, okay, I'm not sure how they can make any money. Well, the truth is, in Tribal Clash Australia, we didn't.
Yeah.
So this was a huge loss leader for us. But of course, we only had,
65 teams?
65. I think we had 70 registered, but there was a few no-shows, which is always the case. But absolutely, we've made a huge loss. This is a massive investment in the future. However, you look at Portugal. So the first year we delivered Portugal, we had 50 teams, I think 48. Second year we had 120.
Yep.
This year there'll be 216. You can see where that's going. Now, 216 is a massive stretch for us. We have never delivered an event with 216 teams in. So that presents some real challenges for us as a team, which we will overcome as we always do. But the reality is that we need all of the events to be at that level, 200 teams, in order for us actually to break even and start to make money.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware, but Tribal Clash as an organization, we actually crowdfunded in 2018. Yeah, and off the strength of most of those investors actually came from the community. There were people like yourself who had taken part in Tribal Clash, yeah. believed in the magic, had experienced how awesome it is themselves, and could see the future that we visualize. And so we crowdfunded, and that crowdfunding, we raised, I can't remember how much it was in the end. We overfunded. I think we raised £200,000. Wow. And we're using that money now to fund the growth into the new territory. So yeah. Australia, USA, we hope to go to South America next year. We're trying to get an event off the ground in Cape Town in South Africa. Mm. And the aim is for Tribal Clash to become a global final with all these regional events feeding into one final event where the top 20 teams from each of those regional events compete against each other. That would be a slightly smaller event, so we're looking at sort of 80-ish teams.
I'd imagine that would be one that also doesn't make much money, but creates the excitement around all the rest.
Yeah, it creates the excitement, and it gives people... Because at the end of the day, we're creating a product that's for competitors, people yeah. that enjoy competing. And what excites a competitor more than doing something, succeeding, and then being able to go to the next level?
Yeah.
And I mean, certainly makes, you know, gets me going when I think about the idea of that. And I'd love to see the finalists from the UK, from Portugal, from USA, from Australia go head to head in a global final. The programming, because it'll be a slightly smaller event, we'll be able to turn things up a notch.
Yep.
My head is buzzing full of amazing ideas.
Yep.
You know, there's so many cool things that we want to do. And at the moment, the limitation on that is purely budget.
Yeah.
But when we can pull these things together and when we've got a global competition, we should be able to attract some decent sponsorship. And that's when everything will start to make sense. Mm. But as you point out, yeah, these competitions don't make money. It's really, really hard to make money from. And at the moment, we're not. So let's be really clear about that. So anyone that's out there that's kind of thinking, oh, these guys are making
$50,000.
Absolutely yeah. not. Yeah. And we did. We flew out the whole team from the UK.
Yeah, all the judges.
Yeah. Well, some from the UK, some from Portugal, where we've got some great guys now that are involved with the event over there. And some guys came over from California as well.
That was my judge.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were great guys.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got some Heidi, who's my partner, and she's both in life and in the business. She's from Finland. So we've got a really international team. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think that that's something that you've almost got to make a loss so you can over-deliver at the start. It almost seems like, you know, in most contests, the only way you can do, and then you hope everybody brings their friends for the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We definitely hope that's the case. So, are you going to bring your friends next year?
I'll be bringing my friends.
Excellent.
Well, I was just saying, I think it's so good for my gyms, just because there's something about just going to a regular CrossFit comp that doesn't always create the right mindset when they go home, because
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh man, I've just got to get better at like my toaster bar, my double unders, my ring muscle ups. And it's like, well, that stuff isn't actually that important. It's mm-hmm. just what happened to be at this comp.
Yeah.
Whereas this comp is just so general.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we went running, we did a paddle board, we did like another swimming thing and a heavy stone. So, you know, you might struggle in some events and do well in other events, but you don't go home just like beating yourself up over your ring muscle ups.
Nothing's a dead stop, is it?
No, it's just like, oh, you know what? I would love to be even fitter next time I come.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what's going to be the next time. So
yeah.
It's just like a general thing, right? General fitness.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, again, that's very much, you know, all part of it. We call it primal fitness. So what we try and do is take out the technical aspects. So in a regular CrossFit competition, obviously, if you can't snatch and you're not very good at double unders, it's going to be a dead stop for you. And it's not that much fun. But you might still be a really fit guy or a really strong guy. Whereas at Tribal Clash, it's just pure, raw fitness.
100%.
100%. And that means it doesn't matter whether you come from a rugby background or, you know, any sporting background, as long as you have a good level of, you know, general physical preparedness, you're going to be able to go there and do pretty well. And if on top of that, you've got a great team who you get along with and you're great at communicating and you've got strong leadership and you just work as a unit, you're going to succeed. You're going to absolutely thrive at Tribal Clash.
Yeah. So the other major talking point at the comp was obviously Benton won the comp.
Yeah.
Contrary to popular belief, they didn't actually wipe the floor with the comp. It was actually pretty close.
Yeah, it was very close.
Between them and CrossFit Athletic.
Yeah.
And I would also say my team. Probably not really, though. We came 10th.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of people were asking questions about it. And in the Instagram comments straight underneath them winning, a lot of people did point out that Obviously, it's Ricky's banned from
all
the sanctional events,
which
is pretty much all the other major competitions in the whole world now for functional fitness, which is obviously really bad luck for him because it wasn't that case when he first got banned.
Yeah.
So, do you guys have a policy on that? Are you just, anyone can come and do Tribal Clash?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. I mean, it's maybe I should answer from myself rather than from Tribal Clash and as an organization. I mean, we went to Benton yesterday to visit the guys and to hang out with them a little bit and train, and just it was a really great day. And I have to say, I'm super impressed with the community that they've got there. It was just a real delight to be there. It was like being at my own home box. They're just such a fantastically tight, friendly community. And it's very clear that everybody there has just like endless respect for both of those brothers, the Gerard brothers. And I don't really know what went on, but it's very clear to me that Ricky feels like he made some poor choices. Yep. I don't think he was the only person who has made those poor choices that was possibly there at the games.
Yeah.
What most people don't realize is they actually only tested the guys that came first, second, and third. So we don't know the other out of the 40.
Yeah.
But what I do know for sure is that he feels like he made some poor choices, and he has been... he is a competitor. He is a born competitor. Yeah. That guy has more... You can see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
He wants to win. So the worst thing that could have possibly happened to him is to be not able to compete. So let's just say he made some poor choices. It doesn't matter why he made those poor choices. He can no longer compete until 2011. That was the worst punishment that could possibly have been given to him.
Yeah.
That's enough. You know, and I'm very aware of all the trolls out there and the people writing horrible comments. And to be honest, guys, it's just bullying. You know, leave the guy alone. He went in a very dark place after that. And I think personally, everyone in life deserves a second chance. And we should. And what's happened is that kind of cloud has not just hung over him, but the whole box and the whole of that tribe. And I think that's, you know, it's really unfair to perpetuate that. He's taken his punishment. He's got his punishment. He can't compete till 2011. I think everyone should just leave it that and let him crack on. And when it comes to our own competition, we don't have a drugs policy. There is no prize money at Tribal Clash. There is none. You know, you win a mask. And that means more in many ways, I think, because you're competing for the right reasons. You're not doing it for any personal financial gain. You're doing it for the glory of your tribe. You're doing it to prove that the way you do things, where you're from, is better than the way everybody else does things. Now, I mean, he didn't cheat in our competition. So it would be wrong of us to say, okay, you can't compete at Tribal Clash because you cheated in a different competition. I think so. And I think we just have to kind of let things lie. He's, you know, he's desperate to compete. Tribal Clash gave him a platform to do that. Do people think he's still taking performance-enhancing drugs? I seriously doubt that. And having met both of them and especially talking to Ben, you know, and this is only my personal impression. I think that they both have a very high level of integrity, and I think Ben is one of the most genuine, hardworking, trustworthy people that I've ever met. And it's clear from being around his guys and at his box that he models excellence in everything that he does. And I think this has just been a huge black spot on their history. I think ultimately that tribe will be stronger as a result of it. And it's actually made them all pull tighter together. And maybe it's added fuel to the fire. And I know that Ricky personally is desperate to get back and to compete. And he's on it, man. I mean, he in 2011, watch out. But as the tribe in general, Ben and Ricky together... they've now got something to prove as well. And you know, you could see that at Tribal Clash, and they were fierce. And you know, we were watching the teams, and nobody hit it harder than they did. I mean, seriously, the hunger there to win was insane.
I think that the crucial point is that you guys don't have prize money. And I think if you don't have prize money, it doesn't really matter that much, right? Because he's not taking money out of anyone's pocket, regardless of what you think.
Well, it does. I mean, like, is somebody who's taking performance-enhancing drugs, are they going to have an advantage at Tribal Clash? Of course they will. So we don't want that. But at the end of the day, like you pointed out, these competitions don't make any money anyway. Yeah. Drug testing is really, really expensive. Yeah. We're not going to do it. Yeah. You know, and it's our competition more than anyone else's, because there's no prize money, is about integrity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you want to cheat, just like if you want to rob somebody's house, you'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to cheat, you'll find a way to do that. At the end of the day, your community will hold you accountable to some degree. Mm. And but even once that's happened, people have to be allowed to move on and look to the future. And I'm actually really excited to see what happens with those guys, because, as I say, I think this has just added fuel to the fire, and they're desperate to prove themselves and to be vindicated. And I actually think that will happen.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that we gave them the platform on which to compete. I think it was really important, actually, for them as a community to have that, to have somewhere they can go and, you know, throw down and you know, express that fire that's in their belly. And it was great to watch. Mm. I loved watching them.
Yeah, they are animal family. I think what was good was that there was no sourness from them. And I guess there's nothing he can do, right? He's just biding his time.
Yeah.
So looking into the future of Tribal Clash, do you have plans to have more competitions? Are you just trying to pump out the ones you've got? Do you see yourself, you know, really being the leaders in almost the legacy of like the CrossFit Games and the regionals and everything like that?
Well, as I said, we aren't CrossFit. CrossFit's the best way, or one of the best ways, or let's say another way. CrossFit's a very good way of training for Tribal Clash, but it's not the only way.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a CrossFit athlete to, or even train in a CrossFit box to take part in Tribal Clash. It's much more global than that. And we don't really have anything to do with CrossFit. Mm. So, you know, we had quite a few teams as well from F45.
Yep, I noticed that. Yeah,
at the competition. We've had teams of rugby players before. We've had military teams.
Yep.
We've had, in fact, in Tribal Clash UK 2 years ago, a Polish team of firefighters won.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they were just guys from a fire station, you know, that worked together, trained together, and they were machines, utter machines. So, you know, it's not really about CrossFit.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But where are we going? Absolutely. The ambition is to have 6 events, one on each continent on the planet. And then those will feed into a global final. Mm. And that's the route that we're taking right now.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think it is really exciting. I mean, I guess I mentioned CrossFit just because it does seem like to me it's, you know, they did kind of start like the functional fitness competitions,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like you guys have taken it to a more accessible and just honestly fun level for the average person. So, I mean, it's kind of part of their legacy, I guess, they've left.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, CrossFit has been, they've done amazing things all over the world. They've improved my life. And I mean, we run a box and it's as well as Tribal Clash, and it's touched so many people's lives in a really, really super positive way. But as I say, the way it's going at the moment, it seems to be, particularly with the games, very much, you know, dumbbells, snatches, box jumps. And the format and the formula is coming further and further away from the original ranch style competition.
Yep.
And it's the ranch style competition that floats my boat personally. And that's what Tribal Clash was modeled on. And absolutely, we've sort of taken that as a starting point and gone off on our own direction. And we hope to... We're doing our own thing.
Yep.
We're carving our own path. And we're very grateful to CrossFit Inc. for... you know, filling the world full of incredible athletes that come and take part in our competition.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, as a competitor, I really enjoyed the competition, so thanks for putting it on.
Thank you.
And we have listeners from, don't know how many we have in Portugal, but we have a lot in the US, a lot in the UK, and obviously Australia. So where can they find out more and what are the comps coming up?
Okay, so, well, the best place to go is our website, which is just, you know, as you would expect, www.tribalclash.com. We've obviously got an Instagram page.
Yep.
So, yeah, find us on there. Vimeo, we have all of our videos on there. There's a great video from the last event here in Australia.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen it. Serious high-quality cameramen running around.
Yeah, we do have a great media team.
Yeah.
And we, like everything we do, again, just like... the guys at Benton, we also try to model excellence, and we try to be as good as we possibly can at everything that we do within the constraints, you know, budgetary constraints that we have. And so, yeah, we're trying really, really hard.
Awesome.
At the end of the day, we just want to give everybody a fantastic experience. That's what really turns us on. And it's not about making money. This is kind of, that's secondary. You know, we try, or you have to think about it because we have to not run out of money.
Of course.
But that's not why we're doing this.
Yes.
We're doing this because we believe in our product and we believe in the amazingly positive way that it touches lives. I mean, you've seen for yourself how it can literally, this competition lights up communities.
Yep.
It brings people together. I think it will be a bit different next year, possibly for you guys as well, because you might spend a bit more time before the competition training together.
Trying to lift those fucking stones.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, as you know, the most important thing is your team dynamic.
Yep.
And so you can train all week as an individual, just hit the CrossFit sessions or F45 or whatever you want to do. But then maybe once a week at the weekend, get together with your team and do stuff together. Practice the synchronicity, practice how you deal with challenging situations, because that's what Tribal Clash is all about. We're trying to program in a way that that makes you fall apart. We don't make stuff comfortable. I mean, you know, our worms, they're not padded and soft like the ones you can buy. You know, they're really uncomfortable. We're trying to make you uncomfortable so that your team does start to break apart and you will start shouting at each other. And we want to see how you deal with being put outside your comfort zone. And we've seen some great teams on paper with maybe six, well, certainly three or four regionals level athletes.
Yep.
And you look at them and you're like, wow, there's some big names there. And they come up at Tribal Clash and they haven't trained together. Mm. They don't even necessarily like each other that much. Or they don't get on. And they just fall apart.
Yeah.
They absolutely fall apart. Yet you'll see another team that, you know, they're just completely unremarkable.
Yeah.
And they have just got the most amazing team dynamic. And then you see them and they barely even need to communicate because they know what each other is doing.
Yeah.
And they work. It's like dreamlike watching them. They work as one well-oiled machine, and you look at them and you're like, wow, that's a team.
Yeah.
And that's the aim. And I think it's something we get quite a lot. People say to us, oh yeah, I'm not sure if I can do Tribal Clash, I need to train a bit more first, or we're not good enough. And I think that's a real shame, because if you've got six members at your box, as long as three are men and three women, it doesn't matter if one has a wooden leg, one can't see too well, and one's partially deaf, or whatever. That's a team, you know. Go along.
Rip in.
And that's it. Do the best with what you have, just like in life. You can always be sitting there going, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I had that, or I would do this if I had this.
Yeah.
Or you can just go, you know what? This is what I have in front of me. Let's make the most out of it, and let's see what I can do with that. And those teams, those underdog teams, those ones you wouldn't expect to succeed, are the ones where the crowd cheer the loudest and it means the most to them, and they are the most oppressive. And I think we see that time and time again, these sort of underdog stories coming through, and that's what it's all about. We love that. We absolutely love that.
Well, Andrew, good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much.